We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Experience, presented by Draft. This for UFC San Antonio. I almost said TPC San Antonio, but no, folks, that tournament is no longer on the PGA schedule. We're talking UFC on this show, and no, I am not Paul Shaughnessy. Paul Shaughnessy is on vacation. I am Pat Mayo, and I will remind you all to smash the like for the video, sub to Mayo Media Network, and if you want to get yourselves into a draw for $100 straight cash, here's what you do. Go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the Dog or Pass Podcast. You have a 5-star review up there for the Dog or Pass Podcast. It's what you can do to help out this show more than anything else. And then say something nice about Paul Shaughnessy in the comment, and then you can make it up if you want. I don't really care. But you can put your Twitter handle, your email address, just so I know that you're in the draw and I know how to contact you if you're a winner. $100. Cody Saftic, Fight Network, on the line. That would be nice. Paul can return and see a bunch of nice comments about himself.
Yeah, that would be good. And Paul might not remember much from his double bender weekend. So to be able to come out of it and have some positive reinforcement, probably good for him. But my man, Pat Mayo, my former roommate, my former college associate, my former work associate, my current work associate, my man, happy to do a show with you again, brother.
Yeah, we haven't done a show together since we both became dads. So that's been fun.
Dad life, yeah. I can't imagine Pat Mayo from back in the day still exists, but all the same, responsible two kids. You got two sons, not going to lie, a little bit jealous, but I'm a girl dad, and I'm loving it. Gets cool every day, and watching like the NCAA tournaments from the last weekend, the National Wrestling Championship, it's like, I don't know if I could ever have a son that's going to win a D1 national title, but a daughter that could win a D1 national title, sign Cody up. So yeah, super motivated. Last weekend, got the top ticket on our parlays. Great. The rest of it, not so good. Kind of fell apart with the co-main event. Main event didn't go our way. But yeah, we've got 13 full fights here in San Antonio. And my man Pat Mayo to be the setup guy. So hopefully we can get back to our winning ways, hit a few good ones.
Yeah, I'm a bit like the John Stockton of the Dogger Pass podcast when I come on. I don't know anything about MMA besides what you and Paul tell me and fill me in on. So it's just going to be Pat passing over to Cody. But don't forget, I'm Prize Picks Pat over here. If you want to get in on Prize Picks as well, go to the link down in the description or just go to prizepicks.com. Use code DOP at sign up. They will match you $100 on your deposit. So you deposit $100, you get $100, you have $200. So that's pretty easy stuff. And when I was producing the show before Megan was, I was cleaning up on this shit every single week.
Well, I was actually going to say, not only are you Prize Picks Pat doing that great, but you actually have the Mayo theory. And the Mayo theory is it doesn't matter who is fighting. If it's women's MMA, you take that plus money underdog, you got yourself a good shot. So Paul and I were kind of joking and throwing it around. And then a couple weeks back, it's like, oh, Jessica Andrade loses. She was the favorite. Okay, all the same. We move on to the next week. And the next week, there was a couple big underdog losses. Valentina Shevchenko, she's a minus 850 going into the fight, right? She's a minus 1,400 during the fight and then loses. And we had been hammering that point that Pat always makes. Hit that live money underdog. So last week, finally, people had gotten the point. They were like, okay, it's the Mayo theory. Three women fights on last week's card. First one, Veronica Hardy, plus 325. She scores. Second one, plus 135. Close fight. Split decision. Didn't win. And then the next one is plus 165. It scores as well with another Casey O'Neill, another like hot prospect going down for the count. So people are like full on board now, man. They're full on board. You're not just Prize Pick Pat. I think you figured out a niche part of the market that's like the most profitable niche part of the market.
I was really wondering why people were tagging me in these UFC things that were coming through. It's like, yeah. Plus money. I was like, I don't know what is going on here. It's like, I woke up like, UFC comes on late. I got two little kids. I'm going to bed early on Saturday nights now. And I'm waking up to all these notifications. People are like, thanks for the picks. I was like, I don't remember making picks, but I will take all the credit in the world for picks. But I mean, I've been talking about this for like 5 years since we used to do this exactly. Show together. It was just like, because every time you'd come on, you'd be like, well, she's unbeatable. It's like, well, how come the underdogs just always win? Remember what was that goofy pool that we all played together that time where you got points for picking underdogs? And I would just pick every women's underdog. And I was in like first place in the pool for like 8 months. Does that
yeah,
still happen?
Master.
Wait, was that, yeah, is that the one where the guy stole all the money? Was it that one?
No, that was Manpreet. Toutmaster has like been going around for like a decade, but you're absolutely right. You pick a bunch of underdogs. I'm sitting fourth in that pool right now, but yeah, it's like there's 160 people, all of which are good cappers, right? And the angle of hitting these big underdogs is what pays the most because you're getting points per the underdog, right? But if you think about like the biggest upsets, it's always the same thing. It's like, oh man, I can't believe Juliana Pena beat Amanda Nunes, women's MMA. Holly Holm over Ronda Rousey was just like the biggest upset. Women's MMA, the biggest numerical upset in the history of the UFC, Maria Agapova losing to Shane Dobson, is another women's MMA fight. And then right when you think it's just a funny har-har joke or maybe a coincidence, it's like the results just keep speaking for themselves, man. So I'm so iffy when it comes to it now. Like I thought I had an edge before. I totally know I don't now. So maybe we avoid a couple fights here and there, pass on a couple fights here and there. But as a whole, I think we're going to find some decent spots on this upcoming show.
Well, that's good news. And for all my friends out there that still play DraftKings DFS for UFC, I have a product that we're launching really soon at runthesims.com. We just launched F1. We had to get F1 in the bag. And the first lineup that we spit out for F1 was the absolute stone nuts. And it won every single GPP. So hopefully we can do that for MMA as well. That should be coming in about a month's time or so. So runthesims.com. It'll have a custom optimizer, lineup builder, everything like that. So I highly recommend that you check that out. Let's jump into it. Corey Sandhagen versus Marlon Vera. Sandhagen, a minus 180 favorite. Vera, plus 155 on the line. Five-round fight. The fight time on Prize Picks is 24.75 minutes. So I'm guessing this is going to go to decision?
Well, it probably goes to decision. Like, I think it goes to decision through no fault of either guy's striking abilities. Like, they're both top-notch strikers. They both have a great ability to finish. It's that both of them happen to be cast iron tough as well. So when you look at Marlon Chito Vera knocking him out, you could take a frying pan to this guy's head. He's going to be no worse for wear. Submission game, pretty tight as well. Flip side of that with Corey Sandhagen, he's very durable. They both take a lot of damage. So if you're betting these overs, and again, I think the over's going to hit, it's going to be a sweat the entire time because one guy's getting smashed in the face with a knee and an elbow, and they're flying, and they're flipping, and they're twisting, and they're spinning. It's going to be a wild, chaotic fight between two 135-pound guys. Lots of movement, lots of strikes, lots of big, devastating blows. But ultimately, I am sold on both guys' durability. The way to attack this one, if you're a Corey Sandhagen fan, I think you just hit the pre-line on Corey Sandhagen, minus 185. You probably take him by decision, knowing how durable Marlon Vera is, knowing how Corey Sandhagen's had fights where he's landed a couple hundred significant strikes and still not gotten his man out. I think you probably try to improve his money line tag by taking that decision. If you're going to bet Marlon Vera, he's the live bet master. This guy loses the first round in pretty much every fight he's ever been in. And this is not just, again, some joke. He's lost first rounds to Brad Pickett, Guang Yu, Roman Salazar. He's lost first rounds to Andre Ewell, Song Yadong. Song Yadong is actually pretty dope. But what I'm getting at is he pretty much always drops the first round. He's a slow starter. So anytime you want to bet Marlon Vera, you're probably looking to bet him live. Let him lose the first round and then come away with a much better plus money price tag. But part of the reason why he is a slow starter, he is such a badass. That is part of the reason why I am picking against him, is that Sandhagen seems to be a fast starter and that the first three rounds are his best three rounds. He's going to accumulate a ton of damage, a ton of significant strikes. He's going to be very active. Marlon Vera, you know, he takes his time. He bides his time a little bit. He's like a tank engine, though. He's going to keep coming. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to be in a fight all the way to the end. But he may need to rely on a fourth or fifth round knockout or submission, likely the knockout, in order to win this fight, because you're just dropping those early rounds. And that's kind of what I think happens out of Sanhagen. Sanhagen wins the first two. 3, 4, 5 are going to be dicey. Maybe 4, 5 are Marlon's. Maybe 3, 4, and 5, he just needs to win one. But I think if you bank the first two rounds over Marlon Vera, then you can fight, you know, a smart, calculated game plan over the next three, secure one of them, and probably score the decision. So I will go with Corey Sanhagen based on pure volume. Huge Marlon Vera fan. Made a lot of money on Marlon Vera. Always live betted. So again, I can't stress that enough. If you're going to take him, let him lose the first round as he normally does, and then get your money's worth from him as he keeps coming, which he generally does. So that's what you're going to get out of him.
On PrizePicks, Sanhagen is 107.5 significant strikes. Like, how many rounds will it take him to get at that with the pace you think that he's going to put on here?
Yeah, I wouldn't think it takes all that long simply because Marlon Vera is going to be there to engage you. He's going to be there to get kicked. He's going to be there to get hit. He does a good job of slipping. He does a good job of not getting hit by those big shots. But at the same time, he's not exactly he's not the most defensively sound. He's got a great chin, sure, but he is there to get hit. When you look at Sanhagen in his last fight against Song Yadong, it's a fourth round knockout. He had landed 94. His fight prior to that with Peter Yan, he lands 169. His fight prior to that with TJ Dillashaw, he lands 128. So never, if he gets out of, see, even he went three rounds with John Lineker, he lands 120 significant strikes. That was a wild fight where he got backed up the entire time, but you can still see the pure volume out of him. So Cheeto likes to come forward. Cheeto likes to be the bull in the china shop. He likes to make it uncomfortable for you and kind of kill that distance. Whereas Corey Sanhagen loves to play to the outside. If this was in the apex, if this was in a smaller cage per se, I would say probably favors Marlon Vera, not having to kill as much distance and try to find your man. But in San Antonio at the AT&T Center, like, it's going to be the big cage. He's going to have ample space to work with. And I think it's really going to benefit a guy like Sanhagen who's got the movement. So do I see Sanhagen maybe taking a little bit too much damage? Sure. Is he slowing down a little bit? Not for me to say, but you can't fight like that forever. I completely understand that. But he's still young. He's still prime of his career. He's coming off a pretty solid performance over Song Yadong. His fight before that with Peter Yan. Again, Yan, a bit of a slow starter, and you saw how effective Sanhagen was against a guy like that. I think he should win. That is my pick. The last thing I will leave you with, though, is Cheeto Vera at plus money. I mean, he's like a perennial, I am going to fight for your dollar kind of guy. He's very close to a title shot. He's going to come in excellent shape. No doubt about it, you're going to get a very good version of him. I just think stylistically this one plays out towards Corey Sanhagen.
Holly Holm is minus 245. Yana Santos? You know how...
Yana.
All right. She's plus 210. So we're taking her plus 210. Women's MMA.
Yeah, well, see, that's the tough part, right? If you look at Holly Holm... What has Holly Holm got left in the tank, right? On one hand, she's this world-class boxer, and then since then, the boxing's not exactly going her way, so she switched it up almost exclusively to wrestling and grappling, and to that extent, she's actually been quite effective. Scores a lot of takedowns, still has that high ample volume, but she's there for the take-in, right? So when you say plus money play on Eunice Santos, that one's going to get me a while. It used to be Yana Kunitskaya, but she married Thiago Santos, also a former UFC fighter. Not also a former UFC fighter. So, yeah, she's Yana Santos now. I don't know how much that is going to benefit her or not benefit her. We saw in this past weekend, Veronica Macedo. Last time you saw her in the UFC, trash. She gets married, changes her name to Veronica Hardy. Dan Hardy, former UFC veteran, like Thiago Santos. And it's like, damn, dude, she made massive improvements. For Yana Santos, I just don't see them happening. I mean, she's big, she's strong, she's okay in the clinch, but I've seen her get physically pressed up against the cage far too much for my liking. That Holly Holm could revert to that game plan. In terms of the open space, it's like Holly Holm at her best is a much more fluid striker, better kickboxer, better boxing, better jab, better setup, better output. It's just, I do see her kind of declining physically as she kind of gets up there in age. And then as I think in that all to myself, she goes ahead and signs a new 6-fight deal with the UFC. So Holmes obviously motivated that she's going to be able to continue fighting if fighting at an elite level. All the girls she fights are generally all the best girls in the game. So it's hard to say that, you know, she doesn't have a place in the UFC anymore. It's that she doesn't have a place at the elite level. So minus 250 Holly Holm, I don't like it. I would say on a personal level, she is my pick. And then I would take her by decision as well, because I just don't see her getting a whole lot of finishes these days. But then when you think about the Pat Mayo theory, which as crazy as it sounds at times, is the most profitable way of attacking these situations, yeah, it's dog or pass.
The over of 2.5 rounds is -275. So let's say you take home and you take home by decision. Sounds dicey to me, but like, how much better are you doing with that? Does that at least get it down to like -200?
Yeah, yeah. You can get it down to -200 range. Even slightly better on some books. So I feel like that's the way of attacking it. But Paul had bet some like guaranteed lock. This girl's going to lose, but she'll lose by decision because she's super durable. And then she just packed it in. She was 40. She loses by second round, first round knee bar, and then retires right afterwards. So anything can happen. I would say, yeah, if you're going to bet home, you try to improve the price tag by taking that home by decision. As I say that, Giannis Santos is coming off a first round knockout loss in her last fight against Irene Aldana. So she just got knocked out in her last fight. How is she going to come back from that? She's 33 years old. Do you get better at that age? Does your chin get more durable at that age? Is Holly Holm, you know, got no pop in her hands anymore? Yeah, it makes it dicey, but I'm not going to lie. I would personally bet Holly Holm by decision because I don't want to bet Holly Holm at -250 straight up.
Holly Holm by decision at DraftKings Sportsbook is -115.
Yeah, there you go. Like you're improving the line by like 135 points. So why would you not? Now, could Holly Holm kick her upside the head? Sure, it's MMA. Totally understand that. But you feel way better about the idea of betting Holly Holm at near even money if she wins a decision, as opposed to just her straight up at -250 slipping on a banana peel and so much bad luck. You tear a knee, you hurt your shoulder, you were sick coming in, you know, your bad game planning. Like, it's just anything can happen when you get in there. So women's MMA and little Cody Safnick haven't really been getting along too good lately. Holly Holm should win this fight. Chances are she'll now lose this fight, just the way she goes lately.
So she is 47.5 on significant strikes. Looking at her past two, 96 in a loss and 154, that's a lot, in a win. Mm. And those were both by decisions. One of them was a split decision that she lost. She won by unanimous decision. And then when she fought Raquel Pennington, she only got off 30 significant strikes in that, and that went to decision. So I'm just kind of, this doesn't seem like the perfect spot for Prize Picks for me either. So probably just
it's a tough one. Cause again, with Giannis Santos, she's coming off that first round knockout loss to Irene Aldana, right? And you can never use MMA math, but like Holly Holm fought Irene Aldana two fights back and over five rounds lands the 155 significant strikes, landed five takedowns, pure domination. She probably goes out there and does the same thing. And you think, oh man, 250 was a great price tag. I should have loaded up on it. Yeah, it's just, you know, in this division, things tend to happen. So you're always going to have that little bit of uneasiness. But I would think she hits the over. My only one tiny issue is if you got someone that's pure, I fight from distance, like Holm used to be, landing 40, 50, 60 significant strikes, it's easy to see. Whereas Holm's fighting a lot in the clinch now and with takedowns. And sometimes they'll land a ton of these short strikes within the clinch, short little elbows, short little knees. And whoever's counting, they're not counting them. So at the end of the fight, it's like, how did I only get 40 significant strikes? I was dominating. But it's like, well, what is a significant strike? That the language is a little bit gray. So I think she hits that number. That number seems low. I think she hits the over. But that being said, I can see this being largely contested in the clinch because both women at this stage of their career seem to prefer the clinch.
Okay, so Sandhagen over 107.5 or Holm over 47.5 significant strikes. Which one do you like more?
Sandhagen, because there's very little doubt in most people's minds that this is going to be a train wreck. These guys are going to meet in the center of the cage and they're going to throw it down. There will be punches exchanged. Holm could go in the game plan of just neutralizing her and wrestle. There was a time where she couldn't wrestle, so you knew what you were getting out of her. She was going to strike. Now, she can. She spent a lot of time working on her craft, working on that ability to use the wrestling, to use the grappling, use the jiu-jitsu, use those transitions. And I think because she's a little bit older, she doesn't want to take as much damage anymore. She's usually using the wrestling, using the grappling. So Sandhagen, I feel like I know what I'm going to get out of him. Holm could flip the script and have a very low output fight. So I would feel better about the main event over.
Nate Landwehr and Austin Lingo, -225 for Nasty Nate and +190 for Lingo. Right now, the fight time on Prize Picks is 12.5 minutes to juxtapose those with the odds. The over of 2.5 rounds is actually even money, and the under 2.5 is -130. So it's pretty even on both sides. So probably get this into the third round and see what happens. Is Landwehr really deserved to be a -225 favorite here?
So I think Nate Landwehr should be at minus 225 against anybody because he's going to go out there and he's going to fight to the damnedest of his abilities, to the death if need be. But yeah, he's 34 years old and he fights reckless, so reckless that he gets himself collared a lot of the times. His name's Nate the Train Landwehr, and the train will run itself off the tracks because he's just a crazy guy. Fight Network had, well, we had like North American rights to M1 Global, right? M1 Global is a Russian promotion, pretty much all Russian guys that can't get visas to come over to North America. The odd time they'll bring in an American guy to come get smashed, some dude from France, come get smashed, some guy from the UK maybe, come get smashed once in a while, but you're coming in to get smashed. Nate Landwehr volunteers. Hey, I'm from Clarkstown, Tennessee. Might as well take a vacation over to Mother Russia. He shows up. This guy's insane, man. He's absolutely an insane person. He fights Mikhail Korobov, 13-2 at the time, knocked him out in the second. Viktor Kolesnik, 14-3. Kazmet Dalgiev, 10-1. Andrei Letziev, 18-7. A rematch with Viktor Kolesnik, 16-4. He beats them all of them. And where he is also a slow starter, like he'll kind of get his bell rung a few times in the first round, he just keeps coming and he breaks guys down. He's a former like track standout. I wish I had the exact details for you, but he was a D1 track runner. He had a D1 scholarship. His high school like 4.4 or his high school 40-yard dash would have put him as the third fastest guy in the NFL combine that year. So he's a freak natural athlete. Thing is that he's a fighter more than anything else at heart. So when the going gets tough, Nate Landwehr has got good cardio, but at 34 and the amount of damage he's taken, he's positioned himself more as a 50-50 guy. So I bet the bank on him in his UFC debut against Herbert Burns. Herbert Burns sucks, and Herbert has no cardio. And Nate runs himself face first into a knee and got KO'd. His next fight against Darren Elkins, a fight of the year candidate. He fought real sloppy. He did win. Not a great fight for him, but all the same, he beat Elkins. It was dope. And then he fights Julian Arosa, where he gets KO'd in the first round again. Flying knee, 56 seconds in. So now there's an uneasiness, but Nate Landwehr, then he beats Ludovic Klein, third round submission, and then he gets this David Onama. So just for the record, he's a plus 270 underdog over David Onama. James Krause, the now banned MMA coach, reportedly put $2 million on David Onama. Him and his group of bettors had $2 million riding on him. And Nate the Train Landwehr, bad first round, kicks his ass, baby. Just keeps coming. That's who he is. So I like betting him because I know that he's either going to win me some money or he is going to die trying. And I just can't fault the guy for that. The uneasiness comes from you're paying minus 225 on a guy who could very easily get himself KO'd trying to get the KO. It's a bit of a tight and risky proposition. This fight with Austin Lingo, though, I'm not seeing that KO come from Lingo. Lingo was he's an LFA veteran, comes to the UFC, and he's had mixed results. In his debut against Yusuf Zalal, he just very flat-footed, one-dimensional boxer, no wrestling, no takedown defense, no ability to cut off the cage, and he just got very frustrated in that. He did win his next two, one against Jacob Kilburn, who represents the lowest of the low level of UFC fighter, a guy that never won a fight in the UFC, a guy that should have never been in the UFC. So he did beat him, and then he beat Luis Saldana. Saldana beats him in the first round. Saldana's doing well in the first 6-7 minutes, then Saldana tires. That's what allows Lingo to take back over. Nate Landwehr doesn't tire, man. He just keeps coming. So if Lingo's going to require his opponent to maybe fade down the stretch to work his way back into it, it's not going to happen. And so he was supposed to fight Jonathan Pierce. Austin Lingo pulls out with an injury. They book him versus David Onama, the guy that Nate Landwehr pulled the big upset over. Austin Lingo pulls out. They book him over Ricardo Ramos last weekend, 2 weekends ago. Ricardo Ramos misses weight. So they've just shifted the fight with Nate Landwehr, who had an opponent fallout not that long ago, to this card. So for Lingo, it's a completely different matchup. I don't think he's going to be able to utilize his boxing nearly as well. Could he just clip Nate Landwehr walking in? Of course. It's Nate. He's got his hands down. He's there to get hit. And he's 2-2 in the UFC, both losses coming by first round knockout. Yeah, it's on the table. I get it. But if Lingo doesn't get that quick finish, which I'm banking on him not getting, I think Landwehr just backs him up, breaks him down, does what he needs to do and gets the job done. I think when you're fighting in a place like San Antonio with a live crowd and the fans get ruckus and they get going, then I think that'll urge on a guy like Nate Landwehr to throw down. Lingo's from Texas. Could that persuade the judges? Will the fans be in his corner? No. The fans are in the corner for crazy people like Nate Landwehr. Doesn't matter what part of the world he is from. And you fight like that, people like you. They're not going to boo him. Zero chance they boo him for Austin Lingo. He's going to go out there. He's going to get the place raucous, the place going nuts. The judges will see he's the guy coming forward, landing the shots, and I think he wins. I can't put him on the top ticket because of potential durability issues and just the fact that there's zero ring IQ involved in what he's doing, But certainly someone that probably makes, you know, third or fourth line this week.
You brought up lingo, no takedown defense whatsoever. I was looking at the Prize Picks for Landwehr takedowns under 0.5. He has none in his past five UFC fights, so it doesn't even seem like he tries to take people down. Obviously, I don't watch him. You do. Is this a spot where he might end up getting a takedown because his opponent can't stop it?
Yeah, I think it could be. It's just the way he's fighting is he wants the 50 Gs, right? Because even if I lose, if Dana cuts me a check for $50,000 for a bonus, a fight of the night bonus, then it's all good. And so when guys that get takedowns, kind of not as much, get the $50,000 bonus. So I could see him just saying, no takedowns, throw them out the window. But yeah, with Lingo, like he's going to be flat-footed and he's going to look to box. If he stings Landwehr and Landwehr needs a moment, then I think he does take him down. The other thing is with Nate Landwehr, if you look at the guys he's fought in the UFC, Julian Arosa is a BJJ black belt. Darren Elkins is a BJJ black belt. Herbert Burns is a BJJ black belt. Like, I could understand him maybe not wanting to take down those guys, but he's got a good ground game. Two fights back against Ludovic Klein, he didn't take him down, but he choked him unconscious with an anaconda choke. Like, he's got solid ground. Believe you don't fight in Russia against Russian guys and don't know what you're doing. He can wrestle. He can grapple. It's just he feeds into the sound of the crowd, the noise of the crowd. That's what gets the guys blood pumping. And just watch any promo on him. He's a certified crazy person, but he's the kind of guy that you want to tune in Saturday night to watch, even if you're just going to catch a couple fights because you got a crying baby in the next room. His is the one you set the alarm for.
Macy Barber and Andrea Lee. Barber's a -275 favorites. Now we got an underdog in Lee at +235. And you're going to tell me why Macy Barber can't lose. But let me throw this out here at you. When she does lose, how does Lee win?
When she does lose, how does Lee win? Lee wins by sprawl and brawling her. Like she's had porous takedown defense in the past, but if she can shore up her game and keep the fight standing, she sprawl and brawls her way to victory. I don't think that Macy Barber is a great striker quite yet. And you pretty much just saw this not exact same matchup, but something similar last weekend in the Casey O'Neill fight. Casey O'Neill, just like Macy Barber, is a good looking, physically and performance wise, good-looking prospect, right? And the marketing machine's behind her. She's an excellent grappler. She gets the fight to the ground. She's going to style on you. As a result, you're a big favorite, an unwarranted big favorite, over a seasoned veteran of the division. And that's exactly what she got. She gets a girl who's not supposed to do much, but a girl that's challenged. Jennifer Maia's fought for a world title. Jennifer Maia has 10 fights in the UFC. Jennifer Maia only loses to girls like Caitlin Chookagian and Manil Fiorot, also title challengers. So she's kind of creme de la creme gatekeeper, you know? That's too big of a spot for Casey O'Neill. The end result is Casey O'Neill gets boxed up for all three rounds, gets no takedowns, gets beat up standing, loses a wide unanimous decision, underdog cashes. So I think that's what you would be looking for this week, is that Macy Barber's last fight against Jessica Ai, she scores no takedowns, right? That wasn't really part of the game plan. She wasn't able to get it down to the ground as easily as some would have maybe thought she would have. Her fight before that with Montana De La Rosa, it goes 15 full minutes. She landed one takedown. Her fight before that with Miranda Maverick, 15 full minutes, one takedown. If she's not going to wrestle, then she's going to be forced to strike. Andrea Lee could, in theory, win a striking bout. The reason why Coward Cody never pulls the trigger on these things is, to me, it's not just wrestling versus striking. I think the element of cardio is there. Lee just sends to fatigue. She comes in excellent shape with six-pack abs and jacked-up biceps, fights a very good, strong first round, and then you can kind of see her fatigue as time goes. Macy Barber, she's like, I want to say she's 24 now. She's very young. She's got the cardio of a kid, man. She's able to keep going. She had a very competitive fight with Alexa Grasso in which she won the third round, and Alexa Grasso is now the UFC champion. So they've not done her any favors. She's 24 years old now. So fight to fight, she makes not astronomical amount of improvements. She's going to be improving, though, fight to fight. Yeah, I would say she probably beats Lee. But for this line, knowing how we've been getting burned the last number of weeks now, yeah, I want nothing to do with this line. Way too wide for my liking. I do see a path to victory for Andrea Lee.
Manel Capp and Alex Perez, -170 to +145. So one of actually the shorter odds until we get to the very bottom of the card. We've seen some pretty wide gaps in between the favorites and the underdogs so far. So this one's a little bit closer. How do you cap it?
Yeah, cap it for cap. I mean, he's just like a very athletic fighter, used to fight in Japan. And again, very explosive. BJJ brown belt, got some judo in his back pocket. You know, guy has dynamic striking, and he seems to be more live or die by that big power. When you see his wins in the UFC, Ode Osborne, Zalgas Zumagulov, he gets that quick finish. His last fight against David Dvorak, he was forced to at least fight, you know, for the 15 minutes. And I thought his cardio looked pretty all right. I thought his striking, again, that's what he's known for, looked pretty good for the most part. If there was one fault on him, is that he's not the highest volume guy, is that he'll rely on the big power. So his two previous wins in the UFC, first round knockouts. You're playing DraftKings, you're looking for that guy with that high upside that might get a quick finish. Manel Kopp's your guy. When it's prolonged, he just doesn't do enough, and he's a terrible DraftKings play because he's not going to land a whole lot of takedowns. He's not going to land a whole lot of significant strikes. He's not going to do a whole lot. That fight with David Dvorak, he did score a clean knockdown. Stuff like that will help him win the decision. It's just, you know, he's not an exciting three-round guy. He's either that first-round finish or he'll have to settle a little bit. Alex Perez, there was a time where I'd say Alex Perez could offer him everything he can handle. This guy can wrestle, BJJ black belt, out of a very, very credible team, Team Oyama in California. I like Perez, and his career is looking good. He's picking up solid wins. He beats a Usier Formiga in a win that, you know, aged pretty good, solid fighter. And then he takes a short notice fight with Davidson Figueiredo, who's the UFC champion. So on one hand, he just fought for a UFC title. Short notice, sure. He was in good shape. He gets choked out less than 2 minutes in. When you lose in less than 2 minutes in a UFC title fight, they're not going to throw you back in a UFC title fight for a very long time. So he was kind of forced to go back to the pecking order, but he's been injured. He's been on the sidelines. He's had a number of fights fall through. He's had opponents miss weight. He's missed weight. Don't really know where he's at. Finally, they book him versus Alexander Pantoja. It's his big coming back party, and he gets submitted in a minute and 30 seconds. So I don't think he's got to worry about getting submitted here against Manel Kopp. Manel Kopp's looking to knock him out. To me, though, he's not moving as fluid. He's not as sharp as he used to be. Manel Kopp probably lines him up with something and catches him. But if Kopp doesn't knock him out, I think there's a wrestling advantage potentially for Perez. Perez has the volume advantage. Perez has the experience advantage. I've been a coward to this point in the show and pretty much just picked the favorites. I think I'll pick Alex Perez. He'll probably get knocked out with a flying knee partway through the second round. I'll look like an idiot. Partway through the first round, I'll look like a fool. But in terms of live underdogs, he's got some legitimate skill. And I don't think anybody's faulting him for losing to Davidson Figueiredo and Alexander Pantoja, two of the best guys in the world. So let's go back to fighting, you know, lesser competition. Manel Kopp's a hell of a fighter, but I think volume, work rate, and just continuously grind him down. I think that would be the key. So I'm going to take a slight underdog shot here on Alex Perez.
I like it because I was going to really try to trademark that nickname, Coward Cody, and ask you how the chalk was all tasted. But yeah, this is a little shot. I mean, you know that I'm on Santos and Lee when I start throwing down my bets on this. I never really bet MMA unless I'm doing the show with you guys. Either I'm hosting it or I'm producing it. But, you know, that's three underdogs for me now. Let's make an underdog parlay. You'll play the PRP. I'll play just the underdogs that you want to select along with the women's MMA ones, and I'll get paid like 3,000 to one on my money when it hits.
Quite possibly, yeah. Yeah, high insight. But if you could go back in time and just bet those parlayed with those women fights, oh, man, you'd be so rich. Whatever, what can you do? We'll get some future ones.
I remember, I think, because you had mentioned that we lived together. When we worked together, you were at Fight Network and I was at Fantasy. There was one night where I was going out and you had a bunch of buddies over to watch the fights. And you gave me, basically, I was like, hey, give me a parlay for the entire card so I have something to sweat when I come back at like 1 a.m. And I walked back in the door. You're like, hey, that's about to hit. And I was like, eh? I just checked it. I won like $5,000 that night. So thank you for that. That was very nice.
So the first PRP that I ever hit, you and I were living together. And I just want to bring up the exact. It was UFC Fight Night 32, right? And it was a 11 fight card, and we hit Vitor Belfort, knocked out Dan Henderson, Carlos Diego Ferreira, Cesar Ferreira beat Daniel Serafian. I got a buddy named Daniel Serafian now. Rafael Cavalcante beat Igor Prokrides. Brandon Thatch beat Paulo Thiago. Ryan LaFleur beat Santiago Ponzinibbio. Jeremy Stevens beat Ronnie Jason. Jeremy Stevens is plus money underdog in that spot. Sam Cecilio, Godofredo Pepe, Amari Akmeda. To cut it to you straight, there was 22 guys in the card. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Nope, he's still on the roster. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. 21 of the 22 guys are no longer with the promotion.
Dude, that was...
But anyways, it was a greasy PRP hit, and it changed it my life.
Great.
I was selling weed, if you remember, and this was like legal money, so it was great.
it was good news. And you have to remember that was 9 years ago. So it's not shocking that these guys aren't on the roster. 2013. Anymore. So 10 years ago.
Almost. Yeah, it'll be 10 years in September.
So there we go.
Wow, man. Time flies.
Yeah.
That PRP changed my life.
There we are. I mean, it changed my night. I mean, I went and passed out like almost immediately afterwards, but it's fantastic news. I was in Vegas last month, and I ran into one of Hollywood Mike Clay's old, I guess, colleagues. They worked together at the time that we flew up Hollywood Mike Clay, and he brought up to me that I was tasked with showing Hollywood Mike Clay around, which involved us going out to the bar and then us bringing him back to our place and having like an after party with 12 people in our apartment, and how like when Mike Clay got back and talked to this guy, how insane he thought we all were and how terrifying that night was, because that was the night you picked up the tequila bottle off the table and just hucked it through the Juilliard windows.
Yeah, and it actually went right down the center line. Yeah. Like, imagine it was slightly to the left or right.
No, I can.
I would have had to hit another PRP to pay for the damages.
We lived across the street from a U-Haul, like, where they stored all the trucks. The tequila bottle hit the windshield of a U-Haul truck, and it just bounced off. It was fucking incredible.
Bounced right off. No damage. It did not. The bottle didn't break, right? The windshield didn't break. And we lived on the sixth floor of the condo. Like, man, that thing was flying. But yeah, I thought for sure. I was like, Mike Clay, that was a drunken stupor. Lesson learned. They gave Pat a company card and said, here's a budget. Show the guy a good time. Oh, man. I'm sure it was. I know I have a good time. I don't know if Mike Clay had a good time. He was a good guy. I'm hoping he had a good time.
So, maybe he had a good time. I don't think he quite remembers all of the night. I know he remembers that part. I don't think anyone was going to forget that part. I can't remember if that was the night that Paul put me in that headlock or not. And Paul will always bring up that he's 1-0 versus me in fights when I was in a drunken stupor. He sat. And this is, Paul is a lot thinner than Paul used to be, put it that way. He had me in a headlock. He was sitting in a chair and just leaned all of his weight on my throat when I was going to tie my shoes.
So true story. So Pat and Paul are grappling in the hallway to go out, right? And they're both hammered, but Paul especially. And there's a fold-up seat in the hall. There's nothing else in the hall other than a weight scale, because we'd weigh ourselves all the time, and a fold-up seat, right? And Paul gets this guillotine choke on Pat, but he can't quite finish it. And then whereas most people's arms would have just gone tired, they would have gone tired, let go, he proceeds to sit down. He sat down in this foldable seat in the hallway and just held the choke. And then finally, Pat gets on top of Paul, and then eye gouges him. And it was a DQ win for Paul Shaughnessy because of the eye gouge, but... My last story, we'll move on. I met Pat in college, right? So we're going to college of sports media, and it's like the first or second day, and we're talking, and everyone's like, oh, I'm a football guy. I'm a baseball guy. I'm a hockey guy. So many hockey guys. I'm talking to Pat, and then he's like, oh, what sport are you into? And I'm like, oh, I'm an MMA guy. Like, I'm into fights. Pat Mayo says, oh, like, I've had 30 or 40 fights, he says. I said, you've had 30 or 40 fights? He says, yeah. I says, yeah? How many of them have you won? He said, none. He says, I've never won. He says, I go to parties, I belittle people and beat them verbally until they can't take it anymore, and they sucker punch me out. And I'm like, I've never heard anybody ever be open like that. I got my ass kicked all the time, right? And there was another guy in the college that they went to the same high school or something. And yeah, he was like, yeah, Pat was like, had an uncanny ability to just like beat people verbally, mentally. And then, as a guy that's been beat verbally, once you get beat verbally, you generally move to the physical, right? I'll fight you, right? So yeah, that was it. But he was so open about it. He's like, oh, I've had 30, 40 fights. How many of you want? None. It was pretty solid guy. So yeah. I also saw a midget's full-size friend slap Pat Mayo in the face one time.
Oh, I forgot about that.
He said he was Wee Man. Like, the guy had it coming. You don't go around telling people you're Wee Man and then get offended when people call you Wee Man for the rest of the night.
I thought it was Wee Man.
It looked like him.
And he told me he was.
That's true.
He looked just like him.
Yeah, that is fair.
Here we are. Next fight. When PXG says nobody makes golf clubs the way that they do, they're not lying. The PXG clubs I now have are absolutely incredible. So when I heard about their new Black Ops driver, the driver that promises you don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness, I had to try it because they call me the sandwich on the tee box. I got an awful lot of slice, and I've spent the past 3 years trying to work that out of my game. So I had one driver, then I had another driver, and then I went to a swing coach. I'm still going to my swing coach. And I went to a PXG location for a fitting and got my Black Ops driver, perfectly tailored to me. But here's the sneaky thing. When you're average height, like Pat Mayo, not a whole lot of fitting you need to do. Clubs are made for you, but if you're taller, if you're shorter, you need to go to a PXG location to make sure that it's perfect for you to get that Black Ops driver with the breakthrough in driver technology. Because let's face it, we're not the guys that we're betting on all season long. We have some struggles when it comes to the game of golf, but we do want to get better. Like, I'm actively trying to get better. I took myself down from a 20 handicap to a 10 handicap, and I'm really hoping that without losing a bunch of balls and adding distance, adding accuracy this year, that I can get into that single digits. Maybe even try to challenge like breaking 75 this year. I broke 80 last year, hoping to break 75 at least once this year. And I do think with my new PXG Black Ops driver that I might be able to accomplish that. It's at least given me the best chance that I have. It has more forgiveness, more distance without sacrificing anything. Game changer has been thrown around so much it's really lost meaning, but trust me when I tell you, the PXG driver is a true game changer. You'll be as impressed with it as I am, so learn more and get free shipping on all equipment at pxg.com/mayo and use code mayo at checkout. That's pxg.com/mayo, code mayo, for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/mayo, code mayo.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jesus Christ. Chidi Njokuani against Albert Dureyev, minus 155 to 135. How close am I in any of those names?
You actually got Njokuani not too bad. Like, I thought that would probably be the hard one. Albert, no. Pretty straightforward. Chidi, you know, the way that people remember that one is Chidi Chidi Bang Bang, which is, by the way, his nickname. So I got to sign me up for some Chidi Chidi Bang Bang. Albert Dureyev's going to give him all types of trouble in that he has a massive wrestling advantage here, for sure. If he gets a hold of you, he's generally going to get takedowns. You know, a guy that very effective on the Russian regional scene, fighting against a decent level of competition. He is a wrestler grappler. In his short time in the UFC, it's been pretty much that. His debut against Roman Kopylov, again, easy takedowns, he's able to hold him down. But you see in the Kopylov fight, he's very uncomfortable standing, does not get hit well, and tends to swell a lot around the eyes. So visually for the judges, it's damage and they're going to score it against you. Once he does get the takedowns, he's not doing a whole lot. And if he can't get the takedowns, he's up Schitt's Creek. His next fight against Joachim Buckley, this is somebody he had trained against. So Buckley goes into the fight saying, yeah, Dureyev probably takes me down, but Dureyev's never been punched in the face by me because we're just training partners. And so when the fight starts, that's actually how it played out. He had a way harder time getting down Buckley in an actual fight. Buckley started to land shots on him, you know, slow him down, tire him out. And his eye just swells completely shut. It ends up being a TKO stoppage due to the doctor being like, yeah, you can't see out of an eye. This one's all over. So does he have wrestling advantage? Sure. Could he use that wrestling advantage? Yeah. But my problem is that he's 34 years old, and that's by his own Russian account. I'd love to see the passport. It's possible that he's older than that, but he's not going to be making any improvements to his overall game. Because USADA is knocking on your doorstep all the time and he lives in Las Vegas, he's not going to be able to get away with any type of performance enhancer that's going to really lead his cardio to get all that much better. So I would say this guy's probably on the slight decline. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, there was a time where this guy would have been absolute dead meat to a guy like Albert Duraev, because Chidi is an excellent Muay Thai fighter with absolutely no takedown defense and no grappling. He gets thrashed on these guys all the time. But like any other mixed martial artist, you want to mix the martial arts. You got to know a couple martial arts if you want to mix them together. So he starts grappling a lot, ends up getting a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And Chidi and Jaquani's been using that black belt, I think, a lot more effectively lately. On the Contender Series against Mario Souza, he absolutely battered him pillar to post. Cardio looked improved. Ground game looked improved. His fight with Marc-Andre Barrio, it's a 16-second knockout. For the record, Marc-Andre Barrio has, like, very, very solid durability. But Chidi's an excellent striker. But it's just like Happy Gilmore when he figures out how to putt. Now he's a dual threat. Now he's not just a one-dimensional guy with a long drive. He's got his striking. Is that now he can fall back on his grappling. His last fight with Gregory Rodriguez, he ends up losing one of the most exciting back and forths you're going to see. But it was named, I think, the second or third biggest upset of the year, because Chidi's got Rodriguez dead to rights and Rodriguez ends up pulling this miraculous comeback. In my mind, seeing I had a guy that hurt and I let him off the hook, he's going to fight this one a little bit smarter. Derive may shoot the takedowns, but Chidi and Jaquani's got a height advantage. It's going to be hard to pull him to the ground. Once you do pull him to the ground, I think he neutralizes. It's that time that's spent on the standard department. I think he's just going to beat him with a teep kick, nice little jab, right hand that's going to break around the guard. The longer the fight goes, Derive's going to tire. The takedowns are going to become less frequent. Chidi works his way back into it. So this is a very close and competitive fight. Again, I wouldn't fault anyone for taking Derive because he's got the stylistical advantage. I don't think he's going to pull it together. Chidi ends up winning this thing down the stretch. So the pick is Chidi and Jaquani, and I'm also going to have an eye on the live market. If that he loses the first round, but he doesn't get finished, and it looks like Derive's starting to slow down a little bit, I think Chidi comes back and wins 2 and 3.
If he wins 2 and 3, the over-under rounds for this is one of the few on the card that's 1.5 instead of 2.5. And it's like even money on each side of the 1.5. And the Prize Picks fight time is 7.5 minutes. So even if you get midway past the second round, that's going to be a winner. It sounds like you think this might go a little bit longer than the books do.
Yeah, listen, Chidi knocked out Barrio in 16 seconds, so he could do it to anybody. But Duraev is a cast iron Russian. I won't take that away from him. He can take one hell of a shot. Buckley's a power puncher, and it took him a couple rounds to swallow the eyes shut. So I feel like it's going to get over 1.5. If it's Chidi having his way, he takes over 1.5 to just break him down slowly and put him away. If it's Duraev having his way, he's going to hold on to him with these takedowns, but not get a whole lot of ground and pound or submission threats going. So I think the over 1.5 hits regardless of who wins. And so that's probably a better way of attacking it, in that it doesn't matter who wins. You just need them to fight for 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm checking that on the Prize Picks. I'll have my Prize Picks card. I've been making it as we've been going through here, and we'll see.
Prize Picks Pat.
Well, Prize Picks Pat, put down just like you can too. You deposit 100, you get the free 100 at prizepicks.com with code DOP. And then I'll try to turn that 100 into 300. Then all of a sudden you have 400 and you're good to go if you sign up with code DOP or the link down in the description. Okay? Do that right now. Thank you. Tucker Lutz. Lutz of shit. That's what we call a guy I know. Name Lutz. Against Daniel Pineda. Although, in this line, Lutz isn't shit because he's minus 280. And Daniel Pineda is plus 240. What you got?
Yeah, write the time code for me. But basically, if you ain't tucking, you ain't fucking. We're going with Tucker Lutz this weekend. I think that he's going to get the job done against Pineda. Approach that I'll be going with pretty heavy this year is that you don't want to be betting these one-round possible that they're going to win the fight in that one round. Absolutely, that's what they do. But for the most part, you got to be a little more well-rounded and fight for the full 15 minutes. We see time again, week in, week out, win the first round. And then notoriously bad gas tanks, they start to fade, they fall apart. I guess the most recent example was this past weekend was Makwan Amirakani. Here's a guy who's basically invincible in the first round. The longer the thing goes, he just completely falls apart. Daniel Pineda, in a nutshell, is exactly that. He's 37 years old, and pretty much everything is first round, first round, first round. This is just his recent streak of prior to coming to the UFC, right? Second round finish, 58 seconds in. Minute 10 of the first round. 51 seconds of the first round. 3:33 of the first round. 29 seconds of the first round. 4 minutes of the first round. Then he got caught being on steroids. So those last two wins, Jeremy Candia and Mavlid Kasbulayev, his two biggest wins for the record, pulled off his record, no contest. So the guy's on juice, and he's a first-round finisher. BJJ black belt, kind of big for the division. Striking looks okay, but only for 2 or 3 minutes. He can't continuously strike for a prolonged period. He's not comfortable striking. It's quick bang, 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 try to get the fight to the ground, try to get the submission. The UFC actually does sign him. They match him up with the only guy in the division with worse cardio than him, and he wins. Beats Herbert Burns. His next fight with Cub Swanson, he looked awful. He looked old. He looked slow, flat-footed, got hit a whole lot, knocked out second round by Cub Swanson, right hand. And then his very next fight against Andre Feely, he's getting absolutely killed. It's the best Feely's ever looked, or the worst that Daniel Pineda's ever looked. Like, bad go, man, getting beat up. And he gets poked in the eye, and then, oh, I can't fight. Most guys take a minute or two. Some guys will take the 5 minutes. Very few guys say, I cannot continue. But he was getting his ass kicked so bad, he pulled the, I can't continue. Now, they can't call on that, so they've held on to him. He's done a little bit of grappling, I guess, in his off time, but keep in mind, Pat, that Daniel Pineda actually signed with the UFC in 2012. He fought in the UFC from 2012 until 2014, going 2-4 in the UFC. And this is him back 10 years later, a 37-year-old version that had a couple first-round finishes that were exciting, and now it's shown in the UFC that if he doesn't get that first-round finish, he's as good as dead. He hasn't fought in just 2 years. Is he suddenly that much better? No. He's got one round to make it happen. So again, this could be a live betting spot where you try to bet Tucker Lutz after the first round, assuming he survives the first round. But even then, I just think his takedown defense is too solid that Pineda doesn't take him down. If Pineda doesn't take him down, he can't get his grappling going. If he can't get his grappling going, he's done. Tucker Lutz is a better striker, more volume. I think he's going to push a little bit of a pace, kind of have him moving, kind of work him a little bit. Pineda will shoot takedowns. Pineda will try to strike back, but the more you cause him to work, the quicker he's going to fatigue. Now, 2 years removed from his last performance in the UFC, not on the juice anymore, on a bad losing streak, one-round fighter, I can't get behind him. When guys play stuff like DraftKings and they end up posting tickets where they've won $100,000, $200,000, it's generally because they got guys like Daniel Pineda for real cheap and they pulled off that first-round finish. So I understand that there's a spot for him. I understand there's a way to utilize a guy like that that's just going to go bang for broke. But in terms of me trying to parlay a guy like me trying to, you know, value a certain guy, Pineda is just way too concerning for my liking. So even though Tucker Lutz hasn't had a great performance, like a great run in the UFC to this point, even though we got dominated by Pat Sabatini in the grappling, and that would give you some cause for concern for a guy like Pineda, this is a 3-round fight, not a 1-round fight. Because of that reason, I think Lutz breaks him down.
Steven Peterson and Lucas Alexandra. Peterson is a minus 155 favorite. Alexander a plus 135 dog in this spot. The over 2.5 rounds is juiced up to minus 160. The Prize Picks fight time, 14.75 minutes. So they expect this to go to decision. First of all, do you see anyone finishing here?
No, Steven Peterson's super durable. Like, he's got a decent ground game. It's possible that if Lucas Alexander was real tired, maybe he can sub him late in the fight. But I kind of feel like this thing's going to decision.
All right. Do you like Peterson, though?
I could be tempted into a dog play, but I think you're just forcing plus money, if anything. Lucas Alexander seems to have a kickboxing advantage. If he's being able to set his feet and have a kickboxing battle with Peterson, then I think he's the more skilled technician. The thing with Peterson is that he just comes forward the entire time. Like, the guy is not reckless, but he is a forward pressure fighter. And similar to another fighter from Texas by the name of Alex Morono, there's really nothing about his game that's overly exciting. No real part of his game that's overly high level, but the guy just, he's in your face the entire time. And, you know, being in his own backyard and having the crowd behind him and him coming forward and mixing it up, it's all going to play dividends, I think. Steven Peterson might not have that quick start, but he'll be able to break him down kind of down the stretch. So I believe he's born in California, but fights full-time out of Texas. He'll have the fans behind him. He should have the judges behind him. If he can keep this thing relatively competitive, he probably beats Lucas Alexander. But I think it's going to be one of those close, tight-knit, maybe a split-decision type fight that the underdog is going to have his moments. I feel like Alexander is a lot more physical. I feel like Alexander, you know, has some decent striking. And when you look at his UFC debut, he took it on short notice against Joanderson Brito. You know, it was a Sherman tank of a man, you know, like the guy's a beast amongst beasts and a quick finisher. So he got caught up against him, sure. But against Peterson, he might actually have a little time to get into his comfort zone and show you a better version of himself. So if I needed to squeeze another underdog, I feel like I would take that shot on Lucas Alexander, but I wouldn't mind Steven Peterson as well. Kind of a 50-50 go.
All right, Trevin Giles against Preston Parsons, minus 120 to even money. It's a pure coin flip situation we have on the go here. The over 2.5 is juiced up now to plus 140. The under 2.5 rounds is minus 170. So one of these guys is going to knock each other out?
No, I think this thing goes team in a decision, to be honest with you. Like, Trevin Giles used to be a good prospect, used to have some decent hands, but I don't know, man. He pursued he was going to be a police officer in Texas for a while. Kind of pursued that for a little bit. Wasn't taking his training as seriously. Was fighting at 185 pounds, where he just never seemed to really fit in the division. And it never hit prospect status, man. Like, fanned out, not too good. So he decides, you know what? I need to focus on one thing alone. Leaves the cop gig, drops down to 170 pounds. Physically looks a lot better. The results, still not there. It didn't really matter. I don't think he ever really hit that potential, hit that momentum. Him at his best would give Preston Parsons all sorts of trouble. You know, he's a decent enough counter wrestler. You saw him fight Roman Dolice. In fact, he beat Roman Dolice, and Dolice wasn't able to have a whole lot of prolonged success with the wrestling and the grappling. So in some ways, I feel like Giles could be okay when he is at his best, but he's super low output. The power's not quite there anymore, and I just don't see it for him anymore. Right after the Dolice win, which was, you know, aged extremely well, he loses to Dricus du Plessis by second round knockout. The first round, super gun shy, not willing to engage. Second round, almost afraid to engage, gets himself knocked out. Fights Michael Morales, gets himself knocked down the first round. Durability had never been a question for Giles. Now it's a bit of a question. And he gets this Lewis Koski. Now, Lewis Koski is a one round fighter. Well, Lewis Koski didn't do shit for 12 minutes of that fight, and Giles just stood at him and stared and did nothing. Koski landed one takedown, 50 significant strikes over 15 minutes. It's embarrassing. And yet Giles stares at him. So that's when it dawns on me. If you look back when he fights really good guys, maybe he fights okay. When he fights bad guys, he fights bad. Fights to his opponent's level. Can't trust him. So he ends up being a grappling match against a friend of mine, Mike Malott. Now, Mike Malott used to fight at 145 pounds, moves to 155, now fights in the UFC at 170 pounds. Giles, he was fighting in the UFC at 205 and 185. So Giles is going to be way bigger than Mike Malott. And then they got in there. Mike was bigger than Trevin Giles. He took him down pretty easily. He choked him out pretty easily. I can't get behind Trevin Giles. I just don't think he's got it anymore. He's disinterested. And the thing with Preston Parsons is that he's a solid enough wrestler. His striking looked a lot more improved, a lot better in his last fight against Evan Elder. So definitely something that he's been working on, but he's got some solid wrestling. He trains out of a really good gym. I think that he's making improvements. He's still only 27 years old, and his ability to have a little bit of volume, have a little bit of more comfortableness in stand-up, I think Giles is not going to pull away. Giles is not going to sting him. Giles is not going to out-volume him. And it's just be comfortable long enough to switch in that takedown. He's able to switch the takedowns. I think Parsons is able to edge out Giles. The one worry would be, I always laugh and say that Texas is the worst commission I've seen in MMA, and it is. And like, I don't love betting close decisions where I need one guy to wrestle the other guy, and then I'm going to win a decision in Texas. Like, I need something a little more apparent. But if I got good plus money, great. But there's really no plus. This is like a 50-50 fight by the line, 120 plus 110. Like, there's no real clear-cut underdog. But the pick, I think, would be Preston Parsons, barring a bad judge's decision.
All right, and I'm going to throw that on just based on what you said of going to the distance, because the Prize Picks number on this fight is only 10 minutes. It was like the third round starts. It's a winner. So that's going to go on the ticket for the end of the show. If you're paying attention, again, code DOP at prizepicks.com. Get that match deposit of up to $100. CJ Vergara against Daniel... Oh, I thought it was going to be LaCosta, but it's not. It's Lacerda? Is that right?
You got it, yeah. Custy Lacerda.
Custy Lacerda. Old plus 205 Custy Daniel Lacerda against, minus 240 on the other side. The over 1.5 is plus 155 right now. The under 1.5 rounds, minus 185. The Prize Picks fight time, 1 round, 5 minutes.
I got the over on one single round just because, like, they're 125. Guys, right? This is, we gotta fight for more than 5 minutes. Like, come on. But Daniel Lacerda really very much is his own worst enemy. The guy's extremely explosive. And when I'm fast, this boy is fast. He'd kick you in the head before you even know he was lifting his foot. Unfortunately, in the UFC, a lot of these guys are also fast, especially at 125, and it just hasn't really translated. So, yeah, he can kick you, he can knock you out with some crazy hook kick. But again, when we talk about one round guys, when we talk about guys that fall apart after the first 5 minutes, yeah, Lacerda is exactly that. In his debut, he fought Jeff Molina, who's now banned from the UFC for betting scandal. Doesn't matter. He fights Jeff Molina. The first round, he looked okay, but you can see minute to minute, he's slowing down. Minute to minute, he's not as athletic. He's not as explosive. 42 seconds into the second round, he gets knocked out. They rebook him against Francisco Figueiredo, who nobody knew had some spectacular ground game. Knee bars him in a little over a minute. And then his last fight against Victor Altamirano, he dropped Altamirano. He got a clean knockdown. Again, these guys that are very explosive, one-round guys, they're dangerous that early go. You survive the early go, they fall apart. He ends up getting TKO'd near the end of one. So, yeah, this guy does not figure to go past two rounds. However, Prize Picks got it lined at one round. I'm tempted to say that it probably does see over because I would think if you're his coaching staff, it's like, listen, kid, you got to slow this thing down a little bit. He's not 35 years old. He's a first-round finisher. This is how he needs to fight. Daniel Pineda, old dog. You can't teach him new tricks. That's how he needs to fight. Lacerda's only 28 years old. I feel like they could tell him, kid, slow down, take your time. You've got an entire cage. It's not the apex, right? You've got an entire cage to work with. You know, set it up a little bit. And then Vergara, meanwhile, I don't think he's a quick finisher. He's a guy that's going to break you down. So this is another excellent live betting spot because Lacerda probably beats Vergara for the first 3 minutes, the first 4 minutes, maybe wins a 10-9 first round, maybe scores a knockdown in that first round. And then for whatever reason, if Lacerda knocks it out in the first round, you don't even have to touch it at all. But if this thing gets out of one round, CJ Vergara's best path to victory is, well, the best thing about him is he's gritty. He's tenacious. He won the third round against Ode Osborne. You know, he won the Clayton Rodriguez fight. Same thing. Come forward, mix it up, make it a dirty fight if you need to. So that's what he's going to do here against Lacerda. Lacerda's faster. He's more athletic. He's more explosive. He's got the power advantage. He's got the striking advantage. He does not have the heart. He does not have the cardio. Most of these fights end up being won by the fighter who has more heart and more cardio. So I feel like Vergara is going to break. This line is terrible. This is a bad line for a flyweight fight. This is a bad line for a CJ Vergara fight. But like, he is the rightful winner. That I do understand. So the pick would be Vergara to improve this thing. Vergara inside the distance, you know, under two, under 1.5. I don't love the under 1.5. I could see this thing getting right to about 1.5. But in all those instances, right over 1.5 is great on Prize Picks because need one round. So even Dredrick Tatum's manager would tell Mo Sizlak, three rounds. I just need one. Give me one round, Pat. All I need from Lacerda, we can cash here.
Yeah, I was looking for what would like Vergara by knockout be. Those lines aren't posted everywhere as of now. So, or even Vergara inside the distance isn't posted. So you're going to have to wait till later in the week for that if you want to jump on it. Manuel Torres versus Trey Ogden, minus 145 to plus 125, at least at this point of the card. We're now down to some pretty close fights. I mean, 45 to plus 125 is a little bit better than a coin flip. So do you like Manuel Torres here?
No, I like Ogden, yeah. So unfortunately, we got to wait so long a couple dog plays, but yeah, I feel like Trey Ogden's live for the underdog spot here. I didn't really love the guy coming into the UFC, known as a grappling specialist. He got outstruck by Jordan Leavitt. And I mean, he got outstruck by Jordan Leavitt standing on the outside and allowing Jordan Leavitt just to spam kicks. And as frustrating as it is to see a guy not be able to make any type of adjustments, as frustrating as it is to watch a guy lose a striking battle to potentially one of the lower level strikers of the division, it was a great learning experience. And oftentimes in the sport is about learning experience. So he takes the lesson from Jordan Leavitt. They're like, dude, did you know that you could win a fight standing on the outside and just kicking the guy's leg? You don't have to try to engage him. You don't have to try to take him down. You don't have to sit down on your best right hand. You just got to outwork him. He takes this valuable information and puts it to extremely good use in his next fight. He comes in as a 3-10 underdog against Daniel Zellhuber. Now, Daniel Zellhuber is known as the Golden Boy. He's 23 years old, Mexican prospect guy. Looks good. Looks good on the Contender Series. Moves full-time to Las Vegas. He's training at the best gym with the best coaches and the best training partners, and they're raving about him. Trey Ogden comes in as a plus 310 underdog. Use the valuable lesson that Leavitt taught. Just outwork this sumbitch. That's what he did. He outworked him the entire time. He kept on him. He, you know, whether if you couldn't get him with the wrestling, no problem. Span the leg, make him work, make him carry you, make him just go. And Zellhuber just didn't have the answer for him. So to me, that was a solid win for Ogden. That this guy's smart. This guy can make improvements. He is 33 years old, so very much a gatekeeper. Don't know how much better he is going to get, but he's going to be able to make a better use of his skill set. Manuel Torres is another Mexican prospect. Keep in mind, he ain't Daniel Zellhuber. This guy would be a sizable underdog to Daniel Zellhuber. He looks to be just a pure first-round finish kind of guy. Last fight, 327 of the first round. Before that, 210 of the first round. That was on Contender Series. Before that, 25 seconds of the first round. Before that, 1:03 of the first round. Before that, loses in 1:23. And his other loss is in 59 seconds. Both of those losses, 1:23 and 59 seconds, are by submission. And Trey Ogden's a BJJ black belt and a grappler. This fight hits the ground, Ogden's live for that submission. Not sure what the price is on that, but Ogden by submission is most definitely live and on the table. Ogden is a guy that can fight 2-3 rounds. He's got a little more cardio. Whereas I don't see at Emmanuel Torres, he's just been finishing guys very quickly. His UFC debut, quick finish. Before that, quick finish on the Contender Series. The last time he went past the round was 5 years ago, and he won a split decision. So what does that tell you? If he doesn't finish you in the first round, he gets tired. Once he gets tired, he starts to slip. And you can watch back that Enrique Gonzalez fight. Very much he's gassed out after the first round. So to me, that's the path here for Ogden. Overcome a bad first round. Just like a lot of your companions on this card are going to have to take over in the second and third, make it happen. So I will take that underdog play on Trey Ogden to repeat.
Vincis Salvador and Victor Alamoreno. How close am I on those?
That's Vinicius. I figure like that was a straightforward.
Well, I see, this isn't fair. It can't be Vinicius because there's a letter missing then if that's the case from what Paul wrote down for me. If it's
That's Playboy Paul writing that down for you. Who knows where Ted was at? You got a double bachelor party trial. Vinicius Salvador, right? Pretty straightforward. Victor Altamirano.
Well, it's minus 120 against even money. So another coin flip here. And the over-under in rounds is what is it here? It's 1.5 rounds, and it's minus 180 to the over for 1.5. So it seems like they mispriced the round when they dropped the opening lines.
Yeah. This one's going to be a closely contested scrap, so I'm not sure it matters who's the minus 120 or who's the plus 120. It feels like it's going to be a pretty relatively competitive one. Paul listed, who was the official favorite right now?
Salvador is the favorite at minus 120. Mm.
Yeah, see, I was in at Salvador, the plus money. It's a 50-50 fight. You're not getting any real plus money, but I mean, this fight's a kind of a pass all around. This is the way I see it going. Vinicius Salvador is an excellent kickboxer. He's got a lot of power. Another one of these guys, it's a finisher, but I've got a little more confidence that he might be able to actually continue that pace into the later rounds. You saw him in the Contender Series against Shannon Ross. His biggest issue to me is his takedown defense. Against Shannon Ross, Ross didn't try to take him down. One. He tried to take him down once, and he stuffed it. But outside of that, his striking looked good. It looked accurate. That can throw speed, can throw volume, and has a decent amount of power. Ends up catching Ross and knocking him out. Ross not really known for a great job, but it's a solid win for Vinicius. So signs to the UFC. Dana White's pen to paper, and this will officially be his UFC debut. But Victor Altamirano is just very hittable. Like, he's had a similar path. He's in the Contender Series. His fight in the Contender Series against Carlos Candelario, he wins a split decision. People were so upset thinking that he should have lost that fight that they don't sign him. Dana says, you got to come back fighting Contender Series again. So he does. And he loses a split decision against Carlos Hernandez, which I agree with. I thought he lost. But they sign him because, you know what? Two fights on the Contender Series, both split decisions. This kid's exciting. Sure. He fights Daniel Lacerda, who we've already talked about. Lacerda's not very good. Lacerda catches him clean and puts him down. Once he got back up, Lacerda was huffing and puffing, and that was it. Ronald blew his house down, but he's extremely hittable. That would be the question for me. So Vinicius is going to be able to have ample opportunity to find his mark, touch this guy up, land shots, and potentially knock him out. The thing with Altamirano, though, is he's Mexican, so knocking him out, one hell of a task. Good luck. And his wrestling is not terrible. Like, he'll get taken down a lot. He'll score takedowns. He'll do a lot of scrambles, and he'll cause you to work because he can work for 15 minutes. I'm not as positive that Vinicius Salvador can do the work for 15 minutes. Or is wrestling for the first five not going to slow him down? Striking for the next five is going to touch him up a little bit. And then the third round, if he's keeled over and it's 1-1, Altamirano's alive, right? So Altamirano's fight, split decision. You're seeing the closeness and the competitiveness of it, but he can go the 15. Vinicius, I think he's a better fighter. I think he's faster, better strike, bigger power in his shots. He's going to touch him up early, but another live betting situation is if he doesn't knock out Altamirano, I see him kind of letting this thing slip away from him down the stretch. When it was plus money, Vinicius, I take Vinicius. If you're telling me it's plus money, Altamirano, I kind of tempted to just do that because the name of the show is Dog or Pass for a reason. Either give me the dog, whoever it is, or just pass. You don't have to bet every single fight. You can just enjoy fights. This one will be enjoyable, but it'll be greasy from a betting perspective.
It's going to be the same thing for the final fight on the card as well, because it's another minus 120 against the even money, so a coin flip situation. We got Haley Cohen against Tamirs Vidal at plus 100. That sound about right?
Yeah. I mean, with Haley Cohen, she's very boring, not a very entertaining fighter. She spent a lot of time in the clinch. Not very good off her back. Decent enough wrestling that if she can use the clinch to get the takedown, maybe she spends some time on top of you, a little bit of ground and pound. Who knows? Striking is very robotic, and she's not comfortable with it. Her style alone is not enough for her to get to the UFC. So she instead comes to the Contender Series, where you got one chance to impress Dana White. She ends up fighting a close, competitive, split-decision victory over Claudia Leitte. And the thing is, Haley Cowan's good-looking, man. This is a good-looking girl. She's marketable enough that I feel like, why not bring her into the UFC? And old Uncle Dana's feeling generous, so he brings her into the UFC. She's booked to fight Eileen Perez. I had picked Eileen Perez. Cowan ends up having a bad weight cut that puts her in the hospital like the day of weigh-ins. Body shutting down, bad weight cut. That was a month ago. So how bad was her in shape? I don't know. What happened to her? I don't know. But that doesn't put a whole lot of doesn't inspire confidence that you had a bad weight cut that hospitalized you a month ago, and now you're going to jump in there and fight somebody else in the UFC. I can't quite get behind it. Tamirs Vidal, she's no world beater. She actually fought that Eileen Perez that we talked about, won the fight when she girl landed illegal knees on her in a fight that, I don't know, I thought she was going to lose. But regardless, it's like she's not very good. She's still very green. But she's a work in progress. If you look at some of that tape on her from the regional scene, they're fighting in like the back of a small little gym. They're fighting in like a damn near alleyway. They're fighting at a very, very low level. She doesn't have the means. She doesn't have the resources. Coming to the UFC, it's life-changing, right? You have the means. You have some money in your pocket. You have an invitation to come to the UFC Performance Institute. So what you'll see are these very young, green, I hate to say poor, but let's say impoverished fighters. Once they get a better training situation, sky's the limit for them. I'm not saying she's ever going to be a world contender, a world champion, a top 15 type fighter, but she's 24 years old, and I feel like she's someone that could make improvements. Her UFC debut, she wins by a flying knee in the first round. I didn't take as much out of that, but I do see that she's aggressive. She's working on some new techniques. For this fight with Haley Cowan, I think she's a more dynamic striker. She could win those striking exchanges. In the clinch, Cowan thrives in the clinch, but I think that Tamirs Vidal is going to be a big boss. Physically strong. She had some success with Eileen Perez in the clinch as well, so could be comparable. I just feel like one fighter is going to be working, the other fighter is going to be clinging on. So for that reason, the judges should score it for Tamirs Vidal. But Haley Cowan's from Waco, Texas. I don't know if she was on the compound or not, but she is from Waco. Now, maybe she gets like the hometown rub. Like, that's what I'm worried about when they go to Texas, is I need a finish or a beatdown. Mostly contested clinch war fight. That does not bode well against the hometown person. So I could see this thing being a split decision, screw job, or just a bad decision. Or good decision, doesn't matter, but likely a competitive, tight decision.
Reminder to everyone again, I'm going to give one of you $100 straight cash if you subscribe to the Dogger Pass podcast on Apple or Spotify. Leave that 5-star review, say something nice about Paul Shaughnessy when he's back from vacation. It'd be nice to see some nice things written about him for once. Come on, be generous, people out there. Let's pump up Paul's tires a little bit. He's going to have the week off. He's going to come back in shape. I'm sure he's hungover for 4 straight days. That would be impossible. So subscribe, leave the rating and review, 5 stars. And if it's on Spotify, you can screenshot it to me at the PME that you've done it. I'll leave your Twitter handle or email in the review as well so I can put you into that draw. And then if you win that $100, it becomes super easy to win a bunch of money because, Cody, let's have a win in PRP. What is it?
Hit him with the PRP. It's going to be a little chalk heavy this week, understandable. But, yeah, we just need the proper bounces. We are going with Corey Sanhagen, Holly Holm, Nate the Landwehr, Macy Barber, Alex Perez, dog number one, Chidi Chidi Bang Bang in Jaquani, Tucker Lutz, Lucas Alexander, dog number two, Preston Parsons, CJ Vergara, Trey Ogden, dog number three, Victor Altamirano, technically dog number four, Tamiris Vidal, technically dog number five. Those last two are not really underdogs. That's not, I don't think you can consider that a dog, but yeah, whatever. Like, listen, it's going to be a tightly contested fight. When you see the PRP, that stuff will be at the bottom. The stuff that's tight, the stuff that we think we should win, Tucker Lutz. Man, this is not that great of a card when you think about it. I think straight up picks will be good. Certain props. I really like Prize Pick selection this week. I think there's a lot to be offered. But in terms of the parlays, yeah, we'll need a couple bounces. And we'll probably use Corey Sanhagen at the top as a hedge out opportunity. But yeah, wait for Saturday, see what comes up. Watch weigh-ins. Make sure everyone looks good. And again, a lot of quick finishers on this card. I'm betting against them, but it's MMA. Like, if any of them, one of them come through, could be a little bit problematic. So going to try to be smart on this one.
So two things. One, if you do put Sanhagen at the top as a potential hedge opportunity, for what you said about Marlon Vera, you might want to wait for your hedge until after round one and actually pay a bigger price on it, which would be much better. So you wouldn't have to pay the +155. You might have like a +225 or +250 if he loses round one to come into. And like you said, Sanhagen more than likely wins round one. Although, but then you get into that circumstance, you're like, well, my guy's already winning. How could he lose? Kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and you know what? Like, same thing, you go back to that Valentina Shevchenko upset from a couple weeks back. It's like, she's the last piece of this parlay, so everyone's relying on her to win. She's a -850 favorite when the fight starts. So, very easy to hedge out against her. Some people like to let her roll. And she loses the first round. So, after the first round, it's like, shit, could have hedged out. But now, it's half the amount. Half the amount offered. So, if you take it, you feel like a putz. Because she ends up winning the second round. And winning the third round, and then is now a -1400. So the problem with hedging is, do you wait mid round? Do you just do it before the fight starts? But like anything, it's coulda, shoulda, woulda. If you hedge and the that you had initially wins, be like an idiot. Shoulda let it ride. Believe me, when you, it's the other way around, especially if you've gotten 9 fights right and it's the 10th fight. We haven't officially hit a PRP this year, but we went 10 for 11, and the last fight is the main event. Why would you know? And it paid, it was 108-1, right? So why not just head out and take your 54? Like, why do you got to? One guy, he was out of state, and the state he was in wouldn't let him bet. So, you know, tough situation. But for the most part, it's like, we're setting it up for a reason, man. It's the same way you gamble anything. It's not just, you know, I got cojones, you know, I got a big bank, let it ride for the hell of it. It's like, man, we're gonna do this week in and week out. And this is our 9th year of doing this show. This is like my 12th year of gambling on sports. Like, well, MMA, I don't really bet other sports. I tried to bet basketball, man. Fucking Purdue. Why didn't you tell me Purdue sucked?
Well, you could have tuned into the Pat Mayo Experience.
I heard he got Andrew
March Madness and saw who Cus picked as the winner of March Madness. That makes a lot more sense.
I saw that after and I was like, that makes sense. Because the stat was 1 in the last 150. One seed versus, it was 1 of the last 150. And as soon as it happened, I tweeted something out the next day. Someone's like, Andercast. And I was like, no way. And I look into it. Tim is got an uncanny ability for sure, man. For sure. Which is why people love Tim or hate Tim. Whatever your opinion is, it doesn't matter. Tim is the gift that keeps giving.
Prize Picks. Prize Picks, Pat. I'm going to give you some Prize Picks. So the main one that I'm playing is that Vergara fight out of round one, so more than 5 minutes of fight time, with Chitty Chitty Bang Bang over 7.5 fight time minutes. Let's see here. $133 pays $400 on that payout. Just for fun, played another one. Sanhagen, more than 107.5 significant strikes. The two that I just mentioned, Vergara over fight time and Chitty Chitty Bang over fight time, and Trevin Giles fight over 10 minutes of fight time as well. $50 pays $500 at 10 times your money with that one. So prizepicks.com code DOP gets you that deposit match of up to $100. So that theoretically you'll have $200 to throw down if you want to, or you want to play some bankroll management. I don't care what you do. Just sign up for the code of DOP, right, Cody?
Yes, damn right. So far, the fans have been good. Not even just like us promoting picks, but I'm just seeing in general, like people that do end up playing, people that end up seeing it. It's like you get burned in a parlay, you're pissed off. The money line now, they're minus 500. Like, there's no juice left on. Like, I think it's a really fun way. In fact, bookmakers are now just trying to basically take those and offer points and offer overs on spikes and takedowns and everything else under the book because they're seeing fantasy MMA kind of way funner. So, yeah, sign up for DOP and get in on the app. Worst case scenario, they're gonna match you on the promo code for the first deposit, get an extra $100, have some fun with it. If you do good, yeah, keep the thing rolling. If you do bad, it's $100. There's worst investments out there. But hopefully I can do my part this week. Hit something good. So far, I'm looking at Sanhagen, Landwehr, Lutz, pace 2-1. And once I throw in a couple dogs on there and a couple cheaty bang bangs, it's like then we'll run it up to those higher ones. But I just need like the top 3 or 4 to come through. I would be happy with that. So we'll leave it at that. We'll catch you guys next time. Pat, my man, always a pleasure being joined by you and talking fight. I'll have to come in April and do an in-studio show.
Well, yes, and I probably won't be here. I'm going on vacation starting on April 12th. But Paul will most definitely be here, and Megan will probably be here as well. I don't know what Megan's schedule is.
I'll move it back sometime in the summer when you are free. I got to see my guy.
That's perfect. You bring the kids down. The kids can meet each other. It'll all be excellent stuff. But I did want to ask you two DraftKings things before we get out of here. If people are looking to punt this week, looking for someone super cheap, based on what you said, not that they're going to win, but the way that they can win, it's like Daniel Pineda and that Custy Lacerda guy would be the two to go for.
Yeah, so as much as it pains me to say it, Nate Landwehr either beats the crap out of him or he's going to get caught in the first round. So by that definition, lingo, like he would be a pun play, could get a knockout just because that's what Nate sometimes does to himself. He'd be I would say the one that you mentioned, Daniel Lacerda, yeah, 100%. That guy, very explosive. He'd be live.
Pineda.
Vinicius Salvador. Yeah, Pineda. Pineda's a one-round dynamo. Like if he's going to win in that first round, he's going to get the job done. So those would all be your pun plays. What I say from those four options, I would probably lean to Daniel Lacerda.
Yeah, I don't think it matters so much which one that you choose, as long as you identify which one of those four are the ones that have the most upside, because multiple lineups, you can kind of just play your lineup, sprinkle those four throughout them, don't have to like double up on them, and then you can kind of hedge yourself out and try to get your team to the front, or figure out using ownership which side of the other fight is the most owned and just blindly take the other side. Because then if, let's say, Landwehr for example is like 45% owned on DraftKings, that means Lingo inherently is only going to be like 8% owned. Lingo, not only do you have a low ownership guy who gets a finish and scores a bunch of points, you've also eliminated 42% of the field at the same time. Now you only have to beat 58% of the field.
And he's probably your best bet because he's a sizable enough underdog. And yeah, I think you're going with the popularity. People like Nate Landwehr. He will be high ownership. Traditionally, he scores a ton of points. So he'll be heavily owned. When you're looking at the dogs, the chance, Serta, geez, you know he's a first-round finisher. Oh, geez, guy like Salvador, you know he's a first-round finisher. Some of these guys are Pineda, 100%. This guy, at his best, is a first-round finisher. They'll take the action. I think a guy like Austin Lingo, who's not known as a first-round finisher, will fly through the cracks. And it's not like, well, how does a guy that's not a first-round finisher suddenly become a first-round finisher? It's like Nate will run himself into a wall. Okay, he could knock himself out just as much as he can knock you. Like, he is a, Paul would say it, shout out to my boy Paul, a shit-eating wild man, and I expect him to fight like that. So when you're playing fantasy MMA, what I've noticed over the years, it's like you probably got multiple lineups. But yeah, the lineups that are going to have one of those guys, when they do score, they should pay off pretty handsomely.
You can follow Cody on Twitter to catch the final PRP on Saturday morning at CJ Saftik. Of course, follow Paul at Paul Shea. We shall return a week from now, fresh off a, as Cody mentioned, a double bachelor party. Four times away, so a lot of fun for Paul the next few days and a lot of recovery, Paul, before he hosts the show again in a week's time. I want to thank Megan on the sticks for producing show. And of course, I want to thank myself, Pat Mayo, for not only executive producing the show, but stepping in to be a host. And very clearly, I know a ton about UFC now that I've listened to Cody. And hopefully I can win my bets this week. Hopefully you do too, on the Prize Picks, on the betting, whatever it may be. I hope a lot of money goes into your account. Smash like and sub to the channel. Hey out, and I will see you next time.
Experience!